Welcome to The Goodish Show, the show on SaaS marketing, from actionable tips and tricks to insightful interviews with industry leaders.
So I think we're back. So Francie, I think it'd be a good place to start for you to introduce yourself, your agency, what you do there, and we can go from there.
Hey, yeah, so my name is Francie. And we at Goodish Agency, we help entrepreneurs to do digital marketing campaigns. So different stuff from user journey tracking to lots of analytics, Google Tag Manager, Mixpanel, and also PPC campaigns, social media, and things like this.
Yeah, and I work in digital marketing as well, but I focus on SEO. Perfect. So I think the best place to start is where we're all at. So how has 2020 been? How has changed the marketing landscape? And where are we now?
So for us in digital marketing, 2020 was great. COVID influenced everything, but it kind of gave a boost to digital marketing in general. For example, I found some data on a data source, World Advertising Research Center. For example, on average in US, companies are now spending way more on social media, online video, search, display. So those categories are up for 20%. And for example, cinema, newspapers, radio, TV, magazines, billboards. So those traditional advertising is down for 15, 20, 25%, depends on the category. It's, of course, this was influenced by a COVID situation. Everyone have to stay at home. And because of this, brands are now moving towards digital. Digital is the channel where you can reach people even if they are in their living room. So the data is, for example, that in 2020, 35% of all purchases in US was made on via digital channels online, while in 2019 it was only around 18% of purchases were made on via digital channels. So almost doubled the sales, the revenue, everything almost doubled in 2020.
Which gives success companies and entrepreneurs working online a big heads up. It really pushes them forward to have a bigger opportunity to reach their audiences.
Yes, but I also think for SaaS companies in general, things are also, especially for, I see two types. So the business to customers and business to business. And for business to business, things are quite messy at the moment because in one hand, yes, digital channels are trendy, but in the other hand, almost every company on the planet is going through changes. The remote work is the thing at the moment. So basically, over the night or over the month, everyone had to adjust and started working from home. And now it's so if you imagine how the sales process was before, for let's say if you were selling some software or something, so you did some awareness marketing and then probably there were some sales calls and live meetings. Now all of this is gone. So SaaS companies, they have to adjust their sales funnel to be fully digital. There is, so you cannot count on your connections or, you know, when you do the presentation, when you have a live meeting, you can kind of adjust things. Now, if you're doing webinar, it's harder. Everyone is quiet on webinars. You're just giving the content, for example. So I think it's harder to sell. And also the companies are in transition from, so they have to adjust to, they're adjusting to remote work. So the working process is in the optimization, and in those circumstances, it's harder to, a lot of times it's harder to sell. So also a lot of people are speculating how this will end, if there will be maybe economic crisis followed by the pandemic. This might be connected with cutting costs. So I think a lot of things are going on at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. So what are some of the trends that you're noticing going forward, like trends of 2021 in terms of remote work, in terms of where you see the trend going?
I think that the first reaction of most of companies was to just adjust marketing, and they just did kind of rebudgeting, so relocating money from maybe billboards to digital channels. But now it's quite obvious that this pandemic will be here for quite some time, so it won't end in next month. It might be by the end of the year. We might have it next year. So I think now we see strategy changes. So it's not just part-time adjustment, but it's a long-term strategy. This means that now way more people are advertising online, which is already influencing the prices. So one of the things I'm starting to notice is that SEO is back. I remember in few popular Facebook groups last year, there was conversation when someone was asking provocative questions like, is SEO dead? And the idea was that if we have an e-commerce, for example, e-commerce a shop, and we do the just performance ads on Facebook and social media, and all you had to do was showing ads to the right people, having right targeting, and you know, you were making sales. So what's the point of SEO? That was the thinking before the pandemic. But now a lot of people is advertising, so there is more competitions. Clicks are sometimes in some areas more expensive, and it makes sense to rank for certain keywords or to have some positions for organic free traffic. So I think that's one of the trend going on. Also, those temporary solutions like quickly made landing pages, or for example, I mean, I think you have to look at the industries, but lots of restaurants, for example, are now offering deliveries. So businesses, if possible, they are not just adjusting budget, but they are changing the whole strategy, even the business models. And I think we will see a lot of this in 2020. Also, when things will reopen, I think new fears are emerging. For example, in 2019, nobody feared to go out in restaurant for a lunch or for a dinner, but now maybe part of population will think, is it safe? Do they wear masks? You know, how is with the pandemic? So maybe, you know, going into cinema, going into parties, going into restaurants, for this will raise some questions. So about the safety, about the pandemic, I expect there will be some solutions here for this, but also other options might be interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. Like, most companies had to pivot. They had to pivot how they work, which customers that they target usually stay the same, but how they work, how they manage their systems, where they promote themselves, where they advertise, that had to change. They had to adapt with the new age. And 2021 is a really good example of that and the trends that we've seen in the past year. But I really like that you touched upon the SEO factor for SaaS companies. Because like you mentioned, for e-commerce, a good Instagram page might just do and a lot of good Facebook ads might just be the trick to get your sales up. But maybe for B2B sales, SaaS companies, it's a little bit more difficult. It's a little bit more tricky to really get ranked for those targeted keywords, as the market can be quite saturated. So it's all about like long-term keywords. So it's really about like adapting their SEO to grow. And for SaaS companies especially, I think it's a good way to really position themselves as experts in what they're saying, to give a platform for people to talk to their customers directly to solve their issues as they come up. So what do you think about the SEO aspect of like SaaS companies going forward, as well as just utilizing social media and community engagement?
So with the SaaS companies, obviously you have longer sales cycles usually, or at least user journey is longer. So you have top of the funnel, bottom of the funnel campaigns, and then usually you're collecting some kind of leads. After you get a lead, you try people to download a free demo. And after this, there is some kind of free demo or free trial, and then you try to sell them. So you have several stages on this user journey. So you have, when you are creating content, when you try to position yourself, you have to really think what content will serve for what purpose. So when you're doing awareness, maybe as you mentioned, attacking the problem, trying to reason with the audience, to match the motivation with them, trying to get into their mind and understand what kind of solutions they're seeking, what will they type into Google, and how you can answer their question. But then later you kind of have to develop the funnel and pushing them towards your solution. So yeah, I think SEO is important part of that process, maybe especially at this top of or bottom funnel keywords people are typing into Google. But in general, I think for SaaS, this onboarding process is really crucial. So how you define the first run, how, you know, the first time when user is opens the app, how you help users to really understand your product. So I think this is usually everything happens in app. So there is a lot of data, and I think one of the there are also a lot of tools how you can help users. So you can show them like checklists or hotspots, or give them some kind of chat or in-app push notifications. And then you can combine this with emails or ads. So I would say the trend here is personalization. So everything is based on how user is interacting with your app, what he did, if he achieved certain steps. Usually we define something like, we call it a product qualified lead. So the stage where we think that user understands the product. So let's say for a Slack, this would be a moment when you would successfully collaborate, talk about a certain problem in one channel. So let's say 3 or 4 people would exchange the message. You can measure those events in apps. And so this is like a tipping point. Up to this point, you try to educate your user how the product is, how they have to use the product. And after this, you try to sell them. So social proof ads, authority ads, and stuff like this. And I think with nowadays tools, lots of this can get really personalized. So if certain user didn't yet discover some features, you can show them, you can highlight those features. And maybe to another person, you show a video. For someone else, you have a chat. You're collecting all of this data, and if you covered certain topics in chat, then this person, for example, doesn't get an email. The other person can get an email. So I think everything can be really personalized.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's a lot about market segmentation in 2021. I think it's really important, especially for SaaS companies, to like understand their audience as well, and to know who they're marketed to. So it's really good to determine who your target audience is. So you don't really need to have more than 4 different target audiences, but just try to narrow them down, try to define them based on their demographic. So based on their age, gender, location of where they live, as well as just the psychological aspect of it, like how much knowledge do they have about this? So somebody might be convinced with a simple Facebook post, while someone else has a much longer process, but they can also become a long-term customer.
I think when you're segmenting your users, the most important factor is how they are interacting with your business.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I agree. So when you try to do awareness, those demographic aspects are an important part of targeting. But in general, so you have like blog readers, then you have people in free trial, you have heavy users, so the ones who are in your app several times a day, then you have occasional users, and then you have like churned users. So, I mean, this is how I like to segment users and audience based on what they already did in connections with our client. And then this is a good start for researching. For example, if you have churned users, then you have to understand why did they think you are offering them. So your product would be a solution for them, and this might give you ideas for new features or for next segment of market. So because probably there was some expectation that was not met, but it could be, or you know, or you might just have your funnel is wrongly set up and you are overpromising or something. So definitely churned users or users who entered the free trial but didn't pay, those two segments are really a good resource of knowledge for you. And then, of course, people who are coming through the funnel, they tell you a lot about, you know, so you can study them to understand who you need to attract, what kind of problem did they have, so for those messages. So yeah, I think the most useful segmentation is based on how people are using your product.
I think that's a really good point, to really let them answer you where their pain points are, right? Like, where did they find the issues with your product? What are they still trying to figure out? Or where are you maybe not delivering what they were expecting? So it's easily then to be, you can easily turn it into something that they would really find useful. So how important would you say then that collecting data is in analytics itself?
I mean, I remember like 10 years ago when those things are, you know, became popular, or at least I started to be aware of them. And in marketing at that stage, there was a lot of gurus who didn't need data because they had a feeling or they were super creative. I think this completely shifted now, and everyone is completely obsessed with data and everyone is trying to measure everything, which is a good point. I mean, you know, if you have the data, why not analyze it? But still, there is a limitation to data because, so usually the data tells you where is the problem. So it shows you the location. And this is also how we usually use it. So you analyze the funnel, you see, okay, this is these are the points where the funnel is leaking. So this is where we have to go in to do some research and to come up with a solution. But the solution is not written in data. You still have to figure it out. You still have to do the interviews. You have to talk with your current users, your previous users, your future to be users, and trying to understand the problem and to do some creative process, maybe come up with some solution. So, but yeah, so the technology is at that stage that we are able to measure pretty much everything that happens in the app or on our, at least on the things we own. So our website, our app. So why not use it? It's better to do data-driven decision. The chances of continuous success and of growth are much higher than if you're just depending on your gut feeling.
Yeah, it really seems that collecting data is more important than ever. Data has almost become a currency in today's age. But at the same time, we're seeing like a lot of backlash from privacy concerns. So with the recent iOS update, iOS 14, Apple is basically introducing a new privacy clause, trying to limit that data, as well as I think Mozilla, the browser is also trying to limit that. So there's definitely platforms arising that are trying to limit the amount of cookies that you provide to every like web page. So how do you see that evolving?
As a user, I'm happy. As a marketer, I'm not that happy. I think, in a way, I'm happy that we are from European Union and we had this GDPR. So we, as a continent, we are kind of having a flagship on this area. I think it's a good thing because, maybe if you're looking from a selfish perspective as a marketer, it's good to have lots of data and, you know, to do a really precise targeting. But as a person, I think I'm happy that privacy concerns are getting more publicity. The more I read about it, the more it's clear to me that people are easy to manipulate. So in a bad way, you always think, okay, I will use this technique or I will use this tool for good. But you know, maybe there is someone else who has different thoughts. So yeah, I think that's a good thing. But it's always when those changes are, you know, on the horizon, everyone starts to panic, you know, it's the end of the marketing, what will happen, and so on. But in reality, things won't change that much. We will still be able to see most of the events, most of the conversions. So, you know, we are talking about really minor changes here. And I don't really think that most of businesses will be heavily affected by those changes.
Yeah, I think at this point we've all seen Social Dilemma, and we've all seen how your data can be used for not good purposes, right? To manipulate people's decisions. So yeah, from a personal point of view, I would agree that like just having that like extra layer of privacy does feel a little bit more secure. And I'm sure from a marketing agency point of view, there's a way to work around it to still get the data that, like you said, still get the events and still get the data that is necessary for you to make the analysis that you need.
Yeah, maybe those things will be harder, or I mean, at least we will be more transparent about it. So mm-hmm. we will have to ask. And so some users, naturally, they won't agree with it, so they won't give us their data, but that's not a problem. So, you know, you can always do some kind of sampling. You can always help yourself with some good old interviews, user testing. So a lot of, in the community, there is now a lot of blogs and posts on server-side tracking, so where you don't collect data to third-party cookies, but you send them to your server, and from the server, then you're sending them elsewhere or analyze. So it's like mouse and cat play. So there are some limitations. There will be some workarounds. So it's nothing special.
Perfect. Yeah, and this is definitely a topic that we'll discuss more in the future. Just the new iOS changes, new tracking changes. It's definitely something we'll cover on our next Facebook Live. But if you go back to branding and like kind of like the main theme of it, how would you say the use of content is important in this era, in this sphere? What type of content would you prioritize for SaaS companies? Yeah.
The type of content users are craving for depends on the business. But in general, I'm a fan of a content. I think that's, if you try to establish your brand and your authority, that's definitely the way you should go. Not just blogs, also all kinds of content. So Clubhouse is trending at the moment, podcasts, videos. So everything you do, and if it's useful for your potential clients, it's a big plus because, you know, you're giving things for free. So you're friendly, you're building your authority, and also you're kind of defining the feel and the look of your brand. So I think this has multiple positive impacts on company in general.
Yeah, and it looks like Google is starting to prioritize that as well. I believe in May 2021, they're trying to release basically the search engine that will also have all the visual inputs of a website. So it will try to read the images, the infographics, all these different data. So not just text, so it's really moving towards a more visual or even, like you said, podcasts and stuff like that. So it's really moving towards like a more interesting, more interactive type of mediums. So it's definitely something that I think companies could have a good potential with, just like really focusing down on that, doing all the alt text optimizing. I think that will really make a big difference going forward. But yeah, you mentioned Clubhouse. So what are some of your like favorite marketing channels to use?
I like to do some educational events. So before I used to, I was active in youth movements. So we did lots of trainings, we called them trainings. So I think this is also effective marketing channel. So if you do some educational events, you show yourself as authority, you give useful knowledge to people, but at the same time, when those people will have a problem, they will probably think of you and they will come back. So that's definitely one thing I like to do, I like to perform. And as a marketer, I grow on Google Ads, so that was the first thing I specialized. So I still like to do Google search campaigns. I still think it's one. So it's not push market, so you don't pushing stuff in front of someone. It's a pull market marketing. So, you know, when someone is searching for something, you are offering them the solution. You try to present that you are the right match for them. So it's interesting way, and also lots of small details you can tweak around and play with. So yeah, I'm still in love with Google search.
But what about, so we always see a rise and fall of different like social media platforms. So now we definitely see like a rise of TikTok and Clubhouse. And on the other hand, even though Instagram is kind of huge right now, users tend to complain that it's almost impossible to grow. Even for brands nowadays, it feels like it's a very saturated market, which can be Facebook as well, but Facebook with its paid ads can then create the right targeting. So yeah, what about like building communities on these social platforms? Where do you see a lot of potential there?
Definitely, especially so. I think that's the point of branding, to have a community or at least a pool of loyal clients. So investing in community is. It's hard to say. I mean, everything is a top priority if you're starting a business, right? So from building a community to marketing to polishing your product. If it's better to have 10 clients who are completely in love with you than 100 clients who think that you're okay. So in this way, having a community of 10 clients, especially if you're a SaaS, if you're building a SaaS product and you have like some early version and you have maybe 1,500 users in it, having tight community with them can be really beneficial. So you can get lots of feedback. You can test some features before you officially release them. So that's beyond imagination powerful, that kind of community.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think there's a huge potential in literally every brand having like a community of its own, because even before your brand is big, you can start getting those stakeholders, those people who are really interested in your product, those people who want to test your beta products, who give you like really useful feedback, and will promote you amongst their colleagues and friends. So I think, yeah, building a community and just having that engagement, like ask them where they're from, what company they work for, and why did they join your group? And then just try to analyze where are they coming from? What are their pain points? And just talk to them, try to create a community so that people, that it's not only one way, which usually happens with like Facebook pages or Instagram pages. But with Facebook groups, with LinkedIn groups, you can really make a group that communicates amongst each other. So then interaction happened without you even posting anything.
And I think this is how we are using those medias at the moment. So I don't see, for example, on Facebook at the beginning, everyone was posting and, you know, you saw what other people were liking and some people commented politics and stuff like this. I think nowadays, most of the engagement in Facebook is happening inside of communities. So you join in. So I'm just, for example, at least I'm using it that way, but I think that's a trend. So you are in a groups, so you're interested. So, you know, if you're a mountain climber, then you're in mountain climbing groups. If you are interested in grill, you are in grill groups looking for recipes and grill tips. And if you're in digital marketing, you're probably in digital marketing or growth hacking groups. And after the group is big enough, there is just, by default, lots of communication in it. So people are sharing ideas, posting job posts and this stuff. And if this happens on your channel, so if you actually own that community, that's really powerful. That's really powerful, and something you can definitely be proud of.
I agree. And just to kind of like finish off, I have a verse that I'm just going to say, and I'm going to ask you your opinion. It basically goes, you don't have to be better than your competition. You just have to be different. What are your thoughts on that?
I think that in early stages, you really have to be quite big that you have problems with competitors. That's my thought, because so lots of times I think competitors are more inspirations. So you maybe people who are one or two steps ahead of you, and you see them as competitors because they are in a similar similar field that you are, but you know, the question is, are they really taking your clients, or are people really deciding between you or them on a large scale? Because usually for small or growing brands, that's not the case. And I wouldn't bother much with competitors, but I would use them for ideas. I would copy tactics from them, strategies from them. I would try to learn from them, but would not really be afraid of them.
I think that's a really good point. that's the thing. As soon as you find your niche, you know what your target is, and people will like you for the product that you're delivering. So the competition can, yeah, like you said, can be an inspiration, can be something to learn from, to see, to tweak your website. Look at your competitors, see what they're doing well, try to copy things that you like. These are all positive things. We can all learn from each other. So yeah, I agree, competitors don't necessarily have to be stealing your clients, sort of say. Yeah, so I think we kind of like went through the major questions that we wanted to talk about today. So on that note, I think we can finish today's webinar. But thank you everyone for joining us. See you next time. Thank you. Bye.